Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Conversations with David Icke. I'm so excited to have David back on the show. It feels like forever. And I have had time to complete his book, Phantom Self and How to Find the Real One. And I will tell you this, as much as I love everything David has written, this book speaks to my heart. It's the absolute best. So without further ado, good morning, David.
Hello, Maria.
It's so good to have you on the show. You know, I see you got great mention from David Cameron a few weeks ago. What did you think of that?
Well, I was quite taken aback, really, because he was talking about, he was in France, actually. He just met the French president, Hollande, and Hollande had made mention, because, you know, we've got this referendum coming up in June where, in theory, the people will decide if we stay in the European Union, but the campaign, if you like, is being so slanted and so biased towards staying in. It's just laughable. And in fact, I think they've overcooked the dish, because people are so almost offended by the blatant nature of the way it's being skewed. So anyway, he's over there, and Hollande's come out, oh, yeah, Britain should stay in the EU. I thought, you were French, weren't you? Wasn't it British that people were going to make that decision? And it was part of one of the, you know, press conferences. Cameron said that the whole thing regarding the EU was not a giant David Icke type conspiracy. So that actually gave my work a lot of publicity. And shows in a way that we are beginning to get somewhere, because it's like that great Gandhi quote when he was talking about first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. You can almost see the sequence unfolding. So, yeah, what's happening is, you know, more and more people, even in, you know, positions of within the system, are beginning to look at the kind of stuff that I'm communicating and saying, well, actually, it used to sound crazy, but it's starting to make sense. So it's a great time, really, and with this world tour coming up, it's just a great time. I mean, I'm having a ball, really. I mean, it's incredibly hard work because of the interest and dealing with the interest, which may be hard work, but it's much better than 25 years ago when, you know, you couldn't fill a phone box. It's just after all these years, it's great to see.
I think so, too. You know, some of your fans in Canada have contacted me and said, how come David's not coming to Canada on this world tour? We all want to see him.
Well, the reason why, actually, the reason is not why anymore, because I am going to come. The reason why up to this point has been the Canadian government wouldn't give me a visa. I mean, you know, I've been stopped so many times at the Canadian immigration. They invite me to the Christmas party, you know. It's just ridiculous. You know, I turn up and there's usually someone waiting for me behind the back of the immigration booths. If there's not, there's someone waiting for me just down the corridor to take me into, you know, a second interview and all that stuff. And it's been that. And there's been a campaign run by one particular person over there to stop me. But we applied for a visa to speak in Canada quite early in 2017 in Vancouver, in Calgary, and Toronto. And it took a bit of time. And then suddenly, out of the blue, they said, yeah, we'll give you the visa. And the paperwork's supposed to come through in the next few days. And when it does, then we'll be starting to book venues. So, yeah, I mean, I just love Vancouver because, you know, when I look back at my life, especially early on and up to recently, and you'll resonate with this, as they say, you were being challenged to keep going, really. And what would happen is, especially in the early days, I would go to event after event after event after event where no one turned up. You thought, well, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You know, a very handful of people going around America in 1996. You know, and I was traveling around for 3 months and talking to next to nobody. But in that sequence of events over that 3 months in 1996, there was one in Vancouver. And I remember I turned up and I'm thinking at that point, what's the point of going on, really? What's the point of going on? I've wasted my time. And I turned up and 250 people turned up in Vancouver, which was like probably about 220 more than a turn up anywhere else. And it just gave me the lift that thought, no, I'll keep going. I'll keep going. And I went back the next year and it was 350. Went back the next year, it was 700. Went back the next year, it was going to be 2,000. But they managed to get the venue to pull the event. They were silly times in that period in Canada. But it's therefore been a long period since I last went. And it's going to be great to go back because, you know, my experience of Vancouver is especially Vancouver. Vancouver is seriously awake as a city compared with most others. So it's definitely going to come back.
Oh, that's great. I know you had a hard time getting your visa for Australia on this trip as well.
Yeah, well, that involved people helping me, you know, by getting access to people at quite a high level to actually pull it off in the end. And again, you know, it's the same theme, Maria, because just as with the Vancouver experience, and I could give so many others, we'd had a conversation the day before that if the visa didn't come through in 48 hours for Australia, we were going to have to pull those events in July and postpone it because there weren't going to be enough run-up time to make it, you know, successful. 24 hours later, visa came. So it's like just when you get to the edge of the cliff, something happens. And I've got so used to it now that I'm getting more and more laid back about it. You know, okay, it looks bleak, but something will turn up, and it does. It does. But it does teach you to trust because you just know that something's going to come up. Whereas in the early days, of course, without this sequence of, you know, almost finished but suddenly not, you didn't have that trust. So, you know, in so many ways, it's nicer now to do what I do than it's ever been.
Well, that's great. I'm very happy for you. You know, you finished Phantom Self, and there's a lot of stuff in here that was brand new to me, okay, for your writing. And I was so excited. There's so much in there that I was like, wow, okay. You know, speaking of Australia, I had read an article that Australia is intending to deliver vaccines to their population through chemtrails. And when you talked about chemtrails in your book and you mentioned smart dust, I almost fell out of my chair because I didn't even think of anything like that. You talked about smart dust. You talk about nanos in the chemtrails. Now they want to use them to deliver vaccines. I've just been sick for over a week from the heavy spraying here in Arizona. And I never put it together that besides all the other heavy metals that they're spraying on our heads, that they're actually including other dastardly things like smart dust.
Yeah, and they're also openly talking about putting vaccines and drugs into food, genetically manipulating them into food. And of course, there's already been developed a drug which they are manipulating. They've genetically engineered into food, which kills sperm. And of course, that is the most colossal population destroyer in terms of new generations. And you know, when you see sperm counts are falling dramatically around the world, and you know they're putting this this drug in, or they've got this drug to put in food that can kill sperm, it's extraordinary the scale of what's going on. But you're absolutely right. You know, the key thing at this time for people to appreciate is the transhumanist agenda, because I call it in the book transphantomism, because I use the term phantom self to describe the fake self, the belief in self-identity based on name, on race, on religion, on sex, on family background, income bracket, politics, all these things, what I call label consciousness in the book, which create the illusory self, what I call the phantom self. And that's a self-identity with that group of labels that people call me, holds you in five sense reality overwhelmingly. You're filtering reality overwhelmingly through the five senses. And that focus of attention is disconnecting people from an influence, the insight and the intuitive knowing of the greater self, the infinite self, the pure awareness that we actually are. And what that has done is turned the vast majority of people in this world into believing what they see in the mirror is who they are. And you know, there's a video on the internet, you've probably seen it, where they have people throwing a basketball around. Mm-hmm. And at the start of the video, it says something like, count the number of times the ball is thrown, etc., etc. And people therefore focus, and this is the point, they focus, their focus of attention is on the ball. And then at the end of the video, what comes up is, did you see the gorilla?
Right.
And then they play it back, and most people don't see the gorilla, even though when they play it back, it's perfectly obvious. The gorilla walks in the middle of the shot, looks around, and walks off. But most people don't see it because their focus is on the ball. And that is so symbolic of the way our manipulated focus on the five senses alone, which is where phantom self and the subconscious in the subconscious and the five sense level of self, that's where phantom self forms. And it holds people in a focus that sees only what I can touch, taste, and all the rest of it. What I call transphantomism in the book is the agenda unfolding as we look every day, of taking that disconnection from five sense self, from infinite self, to a whole new level by putting technology in the body, and through that connecting body mind to a what I've been actually writing about for years, a technological sub-reality, which is basically what the main promoters of the transhumanist agenda, like Ray Kurzweil of Google, call the cloud. And these people are now openly saying, like Kurzweil, that by 2030, Humans will be connected to the cloud, and the cloud will do their thinking. And the more it goes on, the more the cloud will do their thinking, and the less and less of what we now call human will be will exist. And what they're, of course, selling this by is it will make us superhuman. But the idea, of course, is not to make us superhuman, it's to make us subhuman. The idea is to connect incarnate awareness through the kit, the technology in the what I call the biological computer, the body, to this cloud. So basically, instead of having infinite awareness as your point of reference in terms of seeing this world for what it is, your point of reference will be the cloud.
Christ.
And it's something that is so blatantly unfolding. What they've done is they've used what I call the totalitarian tiptoe to first of all get people addicted to technology. This is the smart, these are the smartphones and all these technologies. So they first of all, and my goodness me, have they done it with so much of the younger generations, they've got people addicted to phones, which you hold. The next stage was what they call wearables. We're seeing that coming in now more and more and more. These are the smart watches. These are the Google Glass. These are the Bluetooth things on the ear, where now we've moved from holding the technology to the technology actually connected to our bodies on the outside. And the next stage is what they call implantables, after wearables, and that is getting the technology inside the body. Now, I read an article in Forbes magazine while I was writing Phantom Self. And the article was saying that in the next 3 or 4 years, implantables will become more and more commonplace in the way that smart technology and so-called wearables are now. And the idea is to create a technological sub-reality actually based on the internet. See, we shouldn't forget that the internet, the World Wide Web, all came out of organizations like DARPA, the Pentagon's technological development arm. In fact, DARPA brags, and it's one of the most sinister organizations on Earth, brags that it was at the forefront of creating the internet, which of course then became what we call now the World Wide Web. Now, I quote a man, as you know, an insider who was speaking in 1969 in Phantom Self, who was just describing the world that we have today in great detail. And one of the things he said in 1969 was to describe what we now call the World Wide Web and to describe what we now call smart TVs. And how we'd have the internet on the TV, and how TVs will be able to see us in our own room, in our own, you know, front rooms, and so these things that appear to spontaneously or randomly come into the public arena are not at all this high technology. I mean, when you think that this control system that I'm describing depends absolutely for its very existence and possibility on the internet existing and on computerization existing, we're really supposed to believe that just by chance they got so lucky that someone somewhere randomly invented computers and the World Wide Web. I mean, it's nonsensical when you put it together.
Of course, and I forget the name of that gentleman that you quoted, but everything he predicted is real. It's all happened, and that was 1969, so it couldn't have just been
a guy called Dr. Richard Day, and he was a Rockefeller insider, and used to be an executive of Planned Parenthood, which, of course, is a massive Rockefeller organization. And in 1969, he was speaking to a group of pediatricians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And no one knows why, but he said when he started, I want, you know, can you take no notes and don't have any recordings, because I'm going to tell you how the world's going to change. And he proceeded to give this detailed lecture on what was coming. And his basic thrust was, well, basically, I can tell you because no one can stop it. And what he described in 1969 was just extraordinary when you compare it to what we have now. And, of course, 1969 was what, 20 years after George Orwell's 1984 came out, a couple of decades earlier, or a decade earlier, was Brave New World, Aldous Huxley. These are all examples, whether it's Huxley, Orwell, or Richard Day, of people who got access to this agenda and its projected future, and were able, in Huxley's case and Orwell's case, to write novels that have actually turned out to be extraordinarily accurate, just like Richard Day has been, and he was telling it as this is how it is, not in a novel form like the other two.
Right.
Doesn't matter. They all have turned out to be correct because they access this agenda, which I've been exposing all these years. More and more, as I get understanding more and more of how deep it goes, and the idea is basically to assimilate the human mind into this cloud, into this technological sub-reality, which is based on the internet and based on what they call the smart grid. You know, virtually everything that comes out these days has smart in front of it in terms of technology. You have smart phones, smart meters, smart cities, smart everything.
Right. That means it's going to smart in the other usage of the word. It's going to smart.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, they've used the word smart
right.
to link it to, well, it must be clever then, it must be good.
Mm.
But what this smart grid is a part of this technological sub-reality. There was a movie relatively recently starring Johnny Depp called Transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in that movie, for those who haven't seen it, is Johnny Depp was a scientist who was trying to develop sentient technology. And they had a quantum computer, which I say the universe is a quantum computer. Actually, I explain in the book why. And what happened is Johnny Depp found that he was dying. So what he and his wife did, his wife was also a scientist in the film, they downloaded his consciousness onto this quantum computer and then downloaded it onto the internet. And the internet became conscious and aware as Johnny Depp's mind. Now, this movie was set just a little bit in the future.
Right. I remember I saw it. And actually, I've got a story for tomorrow of some billionaire that's actually going to try it.
Yeah, well, the internet, now with Johnny Depp's consciousness controlling it, by that time, as now they're saying is going to happen with this whole idea of the Internet of Things, everything by that time was attached to the internet. The fridge was attached to the internet. Everything was attached to the internet. And so as this depth consciousness took over the internet, it was able to control everything connected to the internet. And he was controlling humans by basically this, what we now call smart dust, being sent out on the wind. Humans were breathing it in, and then they were connected to the internet. People like Kurzweil are talking about is that everything is going to be connected to the internet, and that nanotechnology, nanobots or smart dust, tiny nano robots in effect, were going to be everywhere and implanted everywhere, in the streets, everywhere. This is a quote from him. Nanobots, this is smart dust, will infuse all matter around us with information. Rocks, trees, everything will become these intelligent creatures. That's not correct. Everything will become controlled by this sub-reality. Because what they're creating, and I explain why in the book, is a synthetic version of our reality. They're now creating synthetic everything. Of course, we all know about synthetic drugs. What does the word synthetic mean? It means to mimic something natural, to imitate it. And they're creating a synthetic world, imitating, but very different from, the world that we've been used to up to now. They're even developing, this is out in the open, synthetic blood, etc. Now, the idea is that through this this smart dust, that we will do what happened in the Depp movie. We will breathe this stuff in. It will become part of us. And what then happens, because these nanobots or smart dust we'd say they were necessarily self-aware, but they have a form of consciousness. They are self-replicating, and they can respond to situations. They can follow their program to do things within the body and within the world. And this is blatantly what Morgellons disease is about. When you look at Morgellons disease, they are self-replicating fibers. There are silicon bits in there. Some of them in the shape of a pentagon or a hexagon rather. And what is happening is they're pulling these fibers out of their bodies. These desperately unfortunate people, but these things are replicating, and it's exactly along the lines of the smart dust nanobot technology. And so where is it coming from? And we come back to what you mentioned earlier. I'm saying it's in the chemtrails. Right. That's part of it.
Right.
But if you look at it, there's nanotechnology quite openly now in food. There's nanotechnology everywhere. So it's being breathed in from chemtrails, yes, but it's also coming in from other directions. And what they're finding, people who've investigated this in the natural world, is that it's affecting all kinds of life, from trees, plants, everything, in the same way, because it's coming from the sky, thus it's bathing everything in this stuff. And this is where they want to go. And what I'm saying is that the force behind all this, which is, I describe it as a self-aware computer virus, and that's far more literal than symbolic when I say that. This is the force behind what's going on.
Yeah,
and it acts like a virus that infiltrates other systems, just like a computer virus does. So we live in a quantum universe, a quantum computer universe, I would suggest, what people, you know, would call a virtual reality, an interactive virtual reality. And so this virus is infiltrating and infesting that system. And the body is a biological computer. In fact, I've been saying that for years in the books, and a mainstream scientist came out a few weeks ago and said the body's like a biological computer. I only fell off my chair. And so it's attacking that biological and infiltrating that biological computer. And in one word, we are being assimilated into this virus, or by this virus. In the same way, one of the analogies I use are the Borg in Star Trek, where they were assimilating target populations. So the Borg were described as a collection of species that have been turned into cybernetic organisms, functioning as drones in a hive mind called the collective or the hive. And the Borg use a process called assimilation to force other species into the collective by violent injection of microscopic machines called nanoprobes. These are the nanobots, the smart dust that people like Kurzweil talk about. And it describes there about a hive mind. The hive mind is the technological sub-reality, what Kurzweil calls the cloud. And there was also a quote I use in the book from a movie from 1956, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which again described very well in principle what's actually going on, that where, you know, seeds were drifting through space and came to Earth, and from these seeds came pods, here we go, nanopods, which had the power to reproduce themselves like smart dust in the exact likeness of any form of life. And one of the lines in Invasion of the Body Snatchers was, your new bodies are growing in there. They're taking you over cell for cell, atom for atom. And that is what this smart dust is designed to do.
Right. I saw that movie when I was a kid. And I have to tell you, David, it terrified me, because deep inside I know it might sound a little crazy, but I kind of knew that that was true. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah. I had exactly the same feeling, not with that movie, but with others. Something inside, it touches you. It awakens something that you know.
I know. I looked under my bed for so many years to make sure a pod wasn't forming under my bed. David, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about what you call the original Earth and the bad copy we're living on. So stay with us. David and I will be right back.
Does this world get you down? Are you living your bliss? Tired of therapies that don't offer you any real direction or answers? Did you know that Maria does personal life coaching sessions? Save thousands of therapy dollars and get the direction and answers you need to live an authentic life based on your own personal blueprint for this life. All this typically in just one private session with Maria, not countless hours on a couch. Maria combines her professional experience, life experience, and her heredity intuitive gifts to get you back on track. Email Maria today for an appointment at maria@maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A at M-E-R-I-A.net. Get on with the best life you can possibly have. Check out the other side of this happy, loving, passionate woman at www.mariaheller.com and avail yourself of the best coaching around, all in the privacy of your home via the telephone. Gift yourself with yourself. Make an appointment today. Write maria@maria.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to myself and David Icke. If you're not aware of David's work, I don't know how that happens, get over to davidicke.com. Make sure you get his latest book, Phantom Self. I mean, we could talk about it for years on the show and never cover everything that's in it. David, when I was a kid, obviously you and I were feeling similar things. When I was a child, I always knew, somehow, intuitively knew, that this earth wasn't the real earth. And when people used to say to me, what do you think happens to animals when they go extinct? I said, they go to the better earth. They're getting off this planet and going to the better earth. So when I started reading about the high-frequency Earth, the original Earth, and the fact that we're living in a bad inverted copy, I almost fell off my chair again. I was like, okay, I'm not the only one that knows this then.
Yeah, when you look at, for instance, the material from the Gnostics that was found at Nag Hammadi in Egypt in 1945, these were writings from the Gnostic peoples, who were, in effect, they manifested as the Cathars, of course, who were taken out by the Catholic Church in southern France, and as those that ran the great or royal library at Alexandria, which was light years ahead of the rest of, the Catholic Church and the religious view of the world around 100 AD, that kind of period, through to 400 AD, when they basically destroyed it, they burned and sacked the Royal Library at Alexandria because they wanted to destroy the massive depository of ancient knowledge and ancient wisdom that they held. It seemed that was over, but then in 1945, jar was discovered with all these texts in them, and they were from the Gnostics, from that whole period. And one-fifth of them were describing a force, a negative force, a manipulating and controlling force they called the Archons. And they described the Archons, funnily enough, in very cyber-type terms, as if they were inorganic. They were almost cyborg-like, technological, and in so many ways, the way they described them all those years ago was portrayed in so many ways by the Borg in Star Trek that we're talking about. And these writings were fantastic in what they said, but they were also great because they hadn't been circulating, so they could be changed and messed around with. You had them as they were left. And so they told a very different story to the religious story. And they were talking about what they kind of describe as a being. They call it the demiurge, which relates to the devil or Satan in religion. And how this demiurge had created the Archons to serve its interests, and had created this world. World that we see, the Gnostics said, was the world created by this negative force. And they talked in their own terms of how they took a copy of the original Earth, just like downloading, in computer terms, like downloading a website. And then they created, well, it was a copy. It was in many ways, non-natural version of what was there before. And what was there before was a high frequency, and still exists, is a high frequency Earth that is very, very different to this one in terms of the way that people live their lives and interact with it. It's much less dense. There's nothing approaching the stress and the fear and all the stuff that that we have in our world. And what has happened is this. We've talked before. This world that we think is so solid is not solid at all. We are decoding it through the biological computer, the body, in the same way as the computer in front of me now, in the same basic way in theme, is decoding the internet. So what I'm saying is this universe is a quantum computer version of Wi-Fi. If this flat where I am now had Wi-Fi, I wouldn't be able to see it because you can't see Wi-Fi with the naked eye.
Right.
But out of that unseen field or fields, the computer in front of me will download or tune into an entire global collective reality where people in different parts of the world can log in to the same decode through the computer, the same collective reality. Now, the reality that we are experiencing is exactly the same in principle. And what this force did, and what the Gnostics called the Demiurge and the Archons, I am suggesting actually in its base form, is this computer virus. And in the same way you had Agent Smith in The Matrix replicating, so there were endless numbers of Agent Smiths, I say that's what the Archons are. They are replications of this virus. It can take form, but in its basic state, it is energy. It's not in form. And so what this Demiurge Archontic force has done was, first of all, to take a copy of the original reality, take a copy of the information fields of the quantum universe, and then, and this is where all the ancient texts and stories around the world talk in a common theme about the manipulation of human genetics, how humans were interbred with the gods and all this stuff. If you break it all down, I strongly suggest that what they were doing was tuning the human form into this fake reality. So we started decoding the fake reality and turning it into a reality we think is real, instead of before, where we were tuning in and decoding a much more high frequency version of this reality, which manifested as a very, very different existence. These are the ancient myths and stories about the golden age and what have you. That Earth, that reality still exists, but humanity, because of the genetic manipulation, is no longer tuned to it. And what they did, as I explain in the book, when they took the original copy, it may have been a copy, but it was a copy of something wonderful. But what they did is they lowered the vibration of it, so it became a much denser version of the original. And then, since then, they have set about changing the copy into the world that they want. And because they're a death cult, because they are an inversion of life, evil is live written backwards, very appropriately. This force, this computer virus, if you like, it's an inversion of life. Therefore, its focus is death and destruction. It feeds off death and destruction, and it feeds off fear. And I say in the book that there's a very good reason why it feeds off fear, because it is fear. That's what it is. The virus is fear. That's its base state. And all these stories about in different cultures where they talk about this negative force using different names, invariably they talk about how it feeds off fear. The reason it feeds off fear is because it is fear, and thus it's feeding off the frequency that it can absorb. This is why it's created a world and created a structure which is generating maximum fear, maximum depression, maximum anxiety, maximum hatred, all the rest of it, maximum conflict, because it's feeding off that. So we are looking at the world changing into the form that suits this virus. When a computer virus takes over a computer, what does it do? It takes it over. It starts to dictate what the computer does. It possesses the computer. And it feeds off the energy of the computer. That's what it's doing. It makes the computer its energy source. That's what this virus is doing in terms of feeding off humanity and feeding off human energy and feeding off low vibrational human emotion. Now, bringing it all around, this takes us, as I go into in the book in detail, it takes us into the realm of what we do about it. And you see, if you only see the five senses, and most of the alternative media, you know, God bless it for what it's exposing, but most of the alternative media, the vast majority of it, in fact, still sees the world through the five senses. So it can only see five sense solutions. It can only see stockpiling weapons. It can only see fighting the enemy. It can only see things that you can see, touch, and taste as a response to it.
Right.
But if you hate the enemy, if you stockpile weapons and you want to fight the enemy, you are feeding the virus.
Right.
This is what we've got to understand. This virus doesn't mind if we have a violent revolution against something we don't like. Because we're feeding the virus with the energy of that hatred and that anger and all the rest of it.
Well, that's another thing I wanted to ask you. I'm sure from across the pond, our election cycle here must look like total insanity. And the only thing that I can figure out with all the hatred and the fighting and the violence at these rallies and whatnot is that everybody's being mind controlled. I mean, it's got to be. What else could it be that everybody seems to be insane? I mean, what does it look like to you on the other side of the world?
From my point of view, it's absolutely classic divide and rule. And if you take that creating polarities to play off against each other, creating division, creating chasms between one side and another. And if you look at that violence recently at the Trump rally, you had the hatred being thrown from the anti-Trump people at the Trump people. You had the hatred being thrown back from the Trump people to the anti-Trump people. You and both sides were feeding the virus. This is the point, that both sides are feeding the beast. Although it may sound trite, and it may sound, new agey, he'll be wearing a pinny next, and what's he going to do now? It's so weak that it's not. We have to awaken to our true consciousness, our true infinite awareness, our true state of being aware. Because a lot of things happen when we do that. First of all, you move beyond hatred and fighting as a means of changing anything or responding to anything. Therefore, you stop feeding the beast on the level that you do if you don't do that.
Right.
But the other thing is, as you expand your awareness, and it's not really expanding your awareness, it seems like that, we are already infinitely aware. What locks us out from that infinite awareness, which we are, or a perception of it and an influence by it, are the layers and layers of programming from cradle to grave, what I call the program, which creates phantom self through education and peers and media and all the rest of it. Those levels of programming, perception programming, which are all about limitation, which are all about phantom self is the real you. That is what's holding us from being the true awareness that we really are. So it's about removing that. And as you remove the layers by acknowledging the layers, acknowledging the program, seeing where your perceptions actually come from, and it's always the program if it's not infinite awareness. Because there is basically nothing else in this reality. There's the program or infinite awareness, because the program is that all-encompassing. But as you remove the programs, you get access to more and more of your infinite self, and that increases your frequency, speeds your vibrational state. And what it starts to do is lift you out of the vibrational prison cell on which this whole conspiracy happens, and you stop being influenced by it. You stop being affected by things they throw at you in all their multiple forms. You see through the lies and the smoke screens with enormous clarity. The more that you do this, you move beyond having your health being affected by these people eventually. I mean, all these things, this is the point, you move beyond being affected by nanotechnology, which is all exists within this tiny range of frequencies on which this conspiracy operates. You start operating outside of it, you are beyond it. You are more powerful than it. It is not influencing you anymore. It's not affecting you anymore. And this is why, if people look at it, why there is such, and it is 24/7, there's such a 24/7 focus on keeping people in ignorance of their true self. And this is where I came in, because when I had my awakening, the start of my awakening, because it's an ongoing thing, in 1990, my conscious awakening, I started to realize that there were other explanations for reality, for life, for existence. And I started to ask, well, why aren't we told about these? Why aren't they taught in the schools? Why aren't there television programs about them? And that started the process where I saw that actually they were suppressed. So you say, why are they suppressed? And suddenly you're into this massive, massive conspiracy eventually, which are different strands in the same web. In fact, is one conspiracy with different expressions of itself. And the reason there is this focus on keeping us in ignorance of self, in ignorance of the very reality we're experiencing, is because once we start to become aware of it, their game is up. And this is why, throughout the ancient world, there is another common theme about this force, and that is it's terrified of humans awakening to their true nature, because this force then becomes akin to a fly on an elephant's back. What they've done by this focus and manipulation into five sense reality for the mass of humanity, they've made humans blind while they play the one-eyed man. But they're only the one-eyed man. And they can only control us by keeping us blind. And ironically, I'm talking about the one-eyed man. Of course, that's one of their symbols, the single eye.
Right. It's on everything.
So when we become the two-eyed, third-eyed men and women, then suddenly their power over us disappears. This is why, again, they have no problem with people fighting them, people hating them, people being depressed by them, or whatever, any of these emotions. They couldn't care less.
Right. What's food
because,
to them?
Because they're feeding the beast when they do that.
Exactly. Well, David, I have to tell you, you've really knocked it out of the park with Phantom Self. It's another one of those books I won't be lending anybody. And I'm pretty excited about your tour. We only have about 30 seconds left. When does your tour kick off?
Well, it kicks off in London in June, and then I'm going to Australia in July to Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, and Sydney, then to Auckland. Then in September, I'm coming to America, New York, and Los Angeles, and San Francisco, and then I'm going all over Europe, and then having a break at Christmas, and then it all starts again. So where I'm going around the world again to other places that I'm not in 2016, including Canada. So it's a fantastic, tour in the sense of its scale. And it's so important now, because I've been saying for years, 2016, 2017, 2018, these are crucial years in deciding where this goes. So we need to give it everything we've got. And so that's why this tour is open-ended. While people want to hear me, I'm going to keep going.
Good. Well, nobody can say you're not giving it all you got. That's for sure. David, thanks so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Maria. Bye.
Bye. David Icke, check him out. If you're lucky enough to be in one of those towns where he's showing up, don't miss it. Again, thanks for supporting the show. Yeah, I'm one of the few, obviously, alternative media that David does trust. That's why he's been on the show for 17 years. And I will be back tomorrow with news of Planet of the Apes, where I actually can entertain you and make you laugh at the crazy world we live in. Thanks again for supporting the show. See you guys next time.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.